it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chipper is, well, he's not here. I mean, he's here on the phones, but I'm assuming you're in Chicago, or is this one we're leaving to Lavelle? Are we just, is this Lavelle's town and stay out of Lavelle's town?
That's how we do it. We have a gentleman's agreement amongst columnists that if there's a game in your hometown, you get to cover it. So Lavelle's there at his hometown.
What kind of deal is this? Did the Gophers go to Knoxville a lot? I mean, who negotiated this deal?
Music City Bowl.
Yeah, that's bad negotiations. Yeah. Although I do have to say one other thing in the Star Tribune. We just saw Star Tribune where Steve Martin and Martin Short are coming to town, right? They're on fire right now. There is a picture. They've got Martin Short at like 25 in the picture.
Yes. That's a very young Martin Short.
I mean, Steve Martin kind of sort of looks like himself, but Steve's been gray forever. But honestly, did Martin Short submit this photo?
I think that's his graduation photo.
Oh, please check it out right now. It's so good. All right. Are you on the record for a win-loss prediction? Did I miss that when the Trib did that, or do you want to do it right here?
Yeah, we all the writers that cover the Vikings ran a couple days ago, I think, but I'm
17-0.
I said 11-6. Obviously, I don't think anybody's going to pick them to win 14 games again, but I don't agree with the national perception that there's going to be a tremendous fall off. I just don't. So I settled on 11-6, knowing the schedule's really hard, particularly that four-game stretch in, is it October? Yep. So they need to get off to a good start, but this still feels like a playoff team to me.
I agree with you. I got the same number. I think they win 11 games, and I'm with you 100% that apparently we look like homers because most national folks are assuming a drop-off, and they're just assuming that the kid QB is just going to have so many bumps in the road. So let's talk a lot about JJ right here. You know what I think would be funny? Is if, because there's been so much talk now about you got the two power offensive linemen, just like you got the two power defensive linemen, but this is the year that KOC is really going to play power football. If he comes out, throws the ball three straight times and just says, hey, all you runologists out there, I'm still going to pass the ball. What do you expect him to do atypically or typically with McCarthy compared to what we've watched with the two main guys so far this year, with O'Connell, with Kirk, and with Darnold?
Well, that's going to be the fascinating thing because we know what his DNA is. He likes to throw the ball down the field. And remember, the year Kirk got hurt and they had the revolving door at quarterback, he didn't really change that much either. Mm-mm. Now, but I will say this, they weren't built to run the ball like they are now. Back then, so maybe the trust level wasn't, there with him that it should be now. So you have to factor that in. I think, listen, I don't think it's going to, we're not going to see the wishbone. I mean, he's not going to just line up and run the ball. But I don't think he's. I don't think he's going to abandon who he is.
I don't
completely.
Either.
So I think it's going to be a mix. I do think probably early on he wants to establish the running game and establish a physical presence. I think where it will show up most is if it's third and two, they'll be able to run the ball or he'll have confidence. If they get into the deep red zone, they'll be able to run the ball there and not have to always rely on the passing game. So I think it'll be more situational. But I do think from everything we've been told, now you have to, the proof's in your actions, but everything we've been told that they want to have a better commitment to being a physical running team.
I think in total it will be different. I just don't think it's going to be as different as we think, maybe within the core of the game. But I think you're right in the third and two, also in the red zone, the number of times maybe you're going to see McCarthy in the gun compared to Darnold and Cousins. I mean, I think there were times when all of us, whether we're in the media or watching, you're like, come on. I mean, let's see what you can do. But I just think he believes so much in his system. And then, so let's go to this part. We've talked about it so much, and there have been very, very thorough stories on everything they've done for him. Is it possible that we're going to look back at this, if he turns out to be a successful, if not star quarterback, that missing out the first year, and preferably, well, obviously it wouldn't have been with a significant knee injury, but sitting out, watching Darnold, learning the offense, all the talks with O'Connell and McCown and Wes Phillips and all the other meetings, that in the end, that is going to benefit him notably, where we can see that, because the Jaden Daniels of last year, they're the incredible rarities.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a right or wrong, but I've always said this with quarterbacks. I don't think there's anything wrong with the red shirt year, and particularly with O'Connell's scheme. What do we hear all the time about it? It's complicated. It takes time to digest it. There's a lot that goes into it. So for McCarthy to be able to sit and watch and learn and study and see how Darnold prepares for a game, how he goes through a week preparing a game plan, all the things, I think Kevin Seifert had the story where once a week during the season, just JJ and KO last year met to go through things. So I think all those things are, yeah, I think it's invaluable. Does it, you know, can you learn on the job? Sure. I mean, he's going to be doing that this year. But I think to have that kind of educational process where you're not put out there and you can just observe and learn that way, I do think it's beneficial. Now he has to take all that and apply it to the, once he's on the field now. But I think he would tell you that he gleaned a lot from that experience.
When you look back at Darnold, I guess the only stretch where the talk would have been, is McCarthy going to play, is when he had that stretch. Was it against the Titans and the Jags where he was?
Jaguars, that two-game stretch, yeah.
Where he threw the ball all around the field, and we were kind of wondering, I forget who was next, but he had just had a great game. And then played just superior football until the last two. So even if he's healthy last year, outside of some garbage time, he wouldn't have played.
No, and it's interesting. I remember writing a column after the Jacksonville game, and that was the second one. Obviously, he was hurt, so he wasn't an option, but just writing, okay, how's O'Connell going to navigate this? Because the turnover things come back up, and, well, he navigated well. Darnold went on to have a really, really good season, except for the final two games. And so I don't think everything we heard during camp before the injury was they're not going to rush this.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take their time on this. They're not going to force him in there. They brought Darnold in for this very reason, that they don't have to force JJ onto the field before he's ready. And so I think they were going to be very deliberate with his development and not force him out there, put him in a situation where they didn't feel like he was ready. And so probably wouldn't have, honestly. I mean, he the way Darnold played, until those final two games, and you're not going to change then, obviously.
No.
But I don't think he would have gone through this injured or healthy, probably.
Plenty more to discuss with our friend Chip Scoggins. Of course, we're talking Vikings and Bears. We'll talk about it tomorrow also. Season opener for the Vikings in Chicago. We return with Chip in just moments on CCO.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That hurts. All right, we continue with Chip here. This can go back to our first question on, throwing the ball and stuff. As you know, Bears defense, T.J. Edwards, linebacker, doubtful. Josh Blackwell, cornerback, questionable. Kyle Gordner, cornerback, questionable. And then, let's just say this, their best player, not their best defense player, their best player, Jalen Johnson, cornerback, who's a stud, questionable. I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody old school Bears defense. Gary Fencek, I don't think is going to be out there. I mean, that could dictate.
That's a great recall.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a really good cornerback for the Bears, and Leslie Frazier's not going to be out
Frazier.
There. Yeah, I mean, they got some problems.
Yeah, and that's look. I mean, yeah, I think we're going to see, because you're going to let JJ be in these situations, right? So I go back to who Kevin O'Connell is. I mean, you have Justin Jefferson on your team. You're not going to be, you're not going to ignore that. And Hockenson, and when Addison gets back, I mean, they're going to throw the ball a lot.
Thielen too.
Thielen. So I don't, you know, I'd be curious to see when we get to the end of the season what those rushing attempt numbers look like versus last couple years. I think it's going to be more, but I don't know it's going to be dramatically more. I think it'll just be different situations that we see it.
Well, a lot of times, too, I mean, this is a bit of the stereotype, and it's obviously much more nuanced than this, but when it's the rookie quarterback, can you rush his decision-making? Now, I say that because guess what? You want to rush Josh Allen's decision-making. You want to rush Lamar Jackson. But does this mean the Bears are even more aggressive than normal? Well, it's hard to tell because with this coaching staff, they've never played a regular season game before.
Well, that's it. Yeah, there's a lot of question marks on their side about how Ben Johnson's going to call the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing when you're the coordinator, offense coordinator, and then after your group's done, you go over to the sideline and you know, you have the tablet and you're sitting next to your quarterback. Well, now you're the head coach and you got to be paying attention to everything and game situations and all those. You know, both sides have to marry up, so you have to be in tune with what your defense coordinator, I think it's Dennis Allen now, is calling. So
it is, yeah.
And, you know, obviously he's been a defensive coordinator for a long time in the league, and they have a track record on him. So, I'm kind of curious to see what effect, if we'll see, you know, if it's noticeable on Caleb Williams. Obviously, you mentioned in the opening, they shored up their offensive line.
Yep.
Give him more help. So
right.
I'm curious to see kind of the Ben Johnson effect on Caleb Williams tonight.
For sure. And I looked up some Allen numbers during the break. When he first started, he was a big blitz guy. Now, in New Orleans, where they really have been devoid of talent the last few years, his blitz rate was between 25 and 28. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's head coach. He's not doing it. So let's just see there. I just want to go back to a bit of a conversation we had last week. And again, now it's official. Harrison's out of the game, right?
Yeah.
So your leader in the secondary is out of the game. Cam Bynum was celebrating with the Colts when Daniel Jones was looking like Peyton Manning. Okay.
Yeah.
So two new safeties. New cornerbacks outside of Murphy. I don't know. I still look at that secondary and have a lot of question marks. I just wonder if they're waiting until tomorrow when they're going to sign a veteran. Because as you know, if they sign a veteran now, they got to pay him the entire year. And let's say they bring in a veteran tomorrow and they're wondering a little bit. Let's say it's Gilmore, hypothetically. And they're wondering, can Gilmore play the whole year? Well, if Gilmore, after 4 weeks, shows he's got nothing, they can cut him as opposed to play him the whole year. I just think for a team that's kind of all in, to me, that cornerback position doesn't look all in to me.
Well, no. I mean, they have four corners on the roster.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
You're not going to go through the season with four corners. So
yeah.
There has to be and, you know, Jeff Okuda, his history with injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to show that he can stay healthy. So, yeah, I mean, that is not a finished deal there. I mean, they're going to add, you know, some way, somehow, whether it's moving somebody up off the practice squad, going out and getting someone, but I mean, four corners is not enough. And
I mean, they're going to face four wide receivers tonight in a number of sets. Yeah.
Well, that's where, and you know, it's interesting. I'm kind of curious to see, you know, we're so used to seeing Josh Metellus all over the formation in different positions. Does he have to play more of a traditional safety role now, particularly with Harrison out for this game? And hopefully it's just this game. It sounds like, for what they said, he's, you know, he's dealing with a personal illness that is getting better, but just not ready to play yet. But
kind of mysterious, I mean, still, I think. You know, it's...
I mean, it's... you know, all the writers have basically tweeted out the same thing as a personal illness. I think it's... I don't think it's anything like major, but it's enough to make, you know, cause a miss this opener.
It's a little inner ball, but you've been in this. I get the feeling that the beat writers on background have been told, okay, don't write this. Here's what it is. So because none of them seem to be as inquisitive as some of the rest of us who don't know everything that's going on.
Yeah, I don't know the inner workings of that, like if they know specifics other than they've just been told, you know, personal illness that, I mean, he was at practice, right? He was practicing.
Yeah.
So it's the fact that he's able to do that, it tells you he's close. But you're right. Like, Theo Jackson, he's going to have to step up and play Jay Ward. So some of these guys are going to have to play a nickel in different situations. So I think they're going to trust and lean on those pass rushers, Grenard, Van Ginkle, Dallas Turner, to really try to harass and force Caleb Williams into bad throws and help out that back end, because that's what you're going to have to do now.
And like a lot of teams, they have a lot of cap room. I mean, if they wanted to bring people in, they could. I looked it up the other day. They've outlaid a lot of cash, right? So total amount, I think they're number one in the league. But the way they've kind of played the game, they have room to bring people in if they want to. Okay, tonight you're in your executive suite. You're going to watch the game, whether it's Channel 5, ESPN, or ESPN 2. Do you plan on watching the traditional Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salters, or are you going a little more modern with Peyton Eli and at some point a visit from Randy Moss?
You know, as much as I love Peyton and the Mannings, and I do tune into that, the Manning cast from time to time, I'm more of a traditional guy. I like to get the commentators. I like Aikman. I think he does a good job. So I watch the traditional one.
Dave, can you look up for me, because I'm forgetting right now, the school Peyton Manning attended? Where did Peyton Manning go to college?
Alabama guy, right?
Alabama.
Yeah.
He Tennessee. Your guy is on there tonight.
I wear his jersey on Saturdays. His Tennessee Falls jersey on Saturdays when I watch the game.
Which one? Yeah, obviously not the Tennessee jersey. I mean, man, I'm Peyton Eli today. I think they're very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
I mean, again, I think you have great options. It kind of depends on the guests too. You know, because again, if I could say I'm watching just a traditional telecast and I can pick a team together, I'm picking Buck and Aikman, right? I will, and I still value the play-by-play announcer from my previous life. I just think it's just so different seeing how good those two play off each other. I don't think it works every time when you don't have a play-by-play announcer. But,
yeah.
I mean, like last year, and this isn't going to happen, but last year when Belichick would join,
it was great.
It wasn't good. You nailed it. It was great, including kind of some of the salty comments amongst the three of them.
Well, that's what I like. I love it how Peyton and Eli get into it specifically.
Yeah.
He'll see something, he'll be like, oh, no, why are we doing this?
Yes. You know,
it's like he can't help himself. He's just like watching it as a fan, and obviously a great quarterback. Just like, you get the kind of unvarnished takes from him sometimes, which I love.
Exactly. All right, man, enjoy it. And when the Vikings play in Knoxville, we know where to look for you.
All right,
man. Chipper with us. How about the economy? Belsky, we just saw him on one of the networks.
CNBC. In studio over there.
Yeah. Couldn't make it to the fair, but CNBC says jump, and Belsky says, let me grab one of my 750 glasses.
Yeah.
And then you tell me how I had to jump. But for the fair, he came out there when we had guests.
Yeah. Not when he was scheduled.
Yeah, not when he's scheduled.
Either time.
At either time. You know, so maybe he'll join us, maybe he won't when we come back.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is what Dave has to do to get Belsky on the line. Love me, love me. That's how it is. Belsky, of course, shows up at the fair on a day when we have 74 guests, then says, one or two days, I'll be there. No shows. Then today, CNBC says, we'd like to have you on. He goes running over there. Then today, Dave, what happened when we were trying to track Belsky down?
Voicemail.
We see where we rank Belsky. We have feelings here, and they are hurt right now.
You know, the technical term is called love bombing. I was love bombing you, like pulling you in, and then, nope, I'm out.
Playing hard to get, and then, actually, I wasn't playing hard. You're not getting me. Not getting me. Here he is, the chief investment strategist from BMO Capital Markets. Okay, let's get to it. Friday, when I was off, this country added 22,000 jobs in August. Expectation was 76,000. The job numbers have been lousy for 4 months. Are we in trouble economically?
I don't think so. I mean, but at the same time, jobs have been decelerating here pretty decently. Remember, too, that I would not be surprised, Chad, if next month that is probably going to be revised higher. Typically and historically, the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, have had a hard time kind of measuring these. And the other thing, too, seasonality-wise, with respect to August, is typically a lot slower as well. So your listeners would have to kind of think about that. The other thing, too, is you take two steps back, okay? And you say, okay, the Fed, meaning Mr. Powell, has a dual mandate, meaning two things. Number one is inflation, and number two is employment. And for all intents and purposes, especially considering everything that we've been through in this economy, from COVID to the tariffs to all this, the U.S. economy has been amazing, something you and I had the good fortune of talking about for a while. However, with employment maybe slipping here a little bit, it only accentuates.
Maybe. Come on now. 22,000 jobs is more than maybe, right?
But, okay, so again, let's take two steps back and be objective. So I'm just a simple kid from Wilmer, Minnesota. So if you do the math, right, and so we're mid-fours, high fours unemployment. So that means 5% unemployment. Let's just keep, again, the math simple. If you subtract that from 100, that means 95% of Americans still have gigs. And I think from a historical perspective, we need to be aware of that. But it does also pretty much solidify that the Fed is going to start cutting rates to ease money supply and get more money out there so we can make money easier to get from a lending perspective. And that clearly is going to help from the housing side of things as well.
When does the Fed meet again?
This week.
Okay. So will it be a half point?
It won't be a half point. It'll be 25 basis points, and that's already been. So if the Fed cuts 50 basis points, which would be a half a percentage, Chad, that tells the market that they know something that we don't know, and the stock market does not like to think they don't know what's going on. So that would cause more consternation, I would think, and so I think it also sets up one or two more additional cuts before the end of the year, heading into 2026, which could ultimately be, quote unquote, a time where we have easy money and steady but lower growth, kind of Goldilocks type of situation, kind of like we did in 1995.
Okay. The president, in trying to provide a rosier picture of these numbers, made the comment last week for a guy who's into instant gratification, right? I'm going to solve that war in a day. I'll turn this economy around in a week, whatever it might be, said we might not see the true best economic numbers for two more years. Now, if Joe Biden would have said that or Barack Obama would have said that, Donald Trump would have went crazy. But if you're dramatically changing our economy with tariffs, if they hold up in the Supreme Court, and I'm going to get to that in a second, yep. Is he actually right that it takes a couple years to judge how this is going to work or not work with an enormous economic system?
Any kind of thing with respect to macro or economic takes time to unwind. I'm not supporting or denying what President Trump said. It just takes time to get into the system. It's more so, that's why we always say, you know, stocks lead earnings, which lead the economy. By the time it shows up in the economy, it's already in the stock market for a while since then. So I do think that it's going to take a couple of years in this new world of the U.S. taking in money with respect to revenue and the tariffs, but also think, too, that most companies in the United States are sitting at record high margins. Companies are making as much money as they ever have. And so some of those margins are going to be able to, let's say, take on some of the higher costs, either from the production level or the consumer level.
He is Wilmer Zone. He is Brian Belsky, our chief economic guru on this show. Okay, we are headed for some decision on tariffs from the Supreme Court. Now, they're going to start here in a few weeks, and sometimes we expect the Supreme Court to offer up an immediate decision, Brian, and other times they say, we're just going to take our time, and you might get it from us in January, February, maybe even in June, when all the big decisions come out. Tariffs have obviously had an effect, including within our government, when the government has brought in tens of billions of dollars. Let's say the Supreme Court says, you know what? The president was wrong. These are not the emergency extenuating circumstances. And if he wants to get tariffs passed, he has to get them passed through Congress. And that doesn't happen. What will happen to our economy if that takes place?
Well, again, you nailed it in your preamble in terms of timing. Excuse me, whether or not it happens in January or June. Remember, June, you're going to be well into the midterm elections. And regarding with respect to where we are in the economy by June, if things begin to falter a little bit, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the Republicans do in terms of positioning for the midterm election. I'm not going to get into the redistricting and stuff like that. That's just noise. But I do believe that the Supreme Court can play a hand in the midterm elections regarding how long they kind of delay this decision. And let's just say, too, that many people are kind of missing the forest through the trees on this. So say if ultimately it is denied, you're going to have some volatility in the market. I'm not talking about a bear market or a recession or anything like that. That's for the doomsayers are saying. But think about this, Chad. If the Republicans come out super strong in the midterm elections, then President Trump's going to say, okay, let's bring it to Congress. Because Congress will, in a Republican-controlled Congress, they have the better opportunity to get this thing done on the congressional side. So to that degree, you have to be almost careful what you ask for with respect to the Democrats being too aggressive on this whole notion of tariffs.
So a typical small business in Wilmer, do you think they're better off now than they were a year ago under Joe Biden?
I think they are, just because of where the economy is and, more importantly, where interest rates are going, because interest rates are going to go lower. And the key thing is inflation has gone down and people are kind of missing this. The other thing, too, is that from a
– But are we missing that because we're paying more tax / tariffs? So, yeah, it's gone down, but I'm paying more because of the tariff situation.
Well – the other thing, too, is that you think about the tariff situation and the money that we're taking in from all these other countries that we have been paying these massive tariffs for a long time. So, and that includes Europe and what's happened in Asia. We're still waiting for the Canadians to play nice, and we'll see what happens.
But the government sees that. The small business owner in Wilmer doesn't see that.
They may ultimately see that, especially if they're – like if you think about the small business owner in Wilmer, if you think about a lot of these Canadian – companies have come into Minnesota in particular and swooped up a lot of the dairy farms and a lot of the agricultural stuff. And so they could see actually tariffs from Canada on the agricultural side have been very aggressive, Chad, and nobody really talks about that. But that's really the truth of the matter as well. So I would say that in this in this world where a 5% interest rate is the average in terms of the 10-year Treasury, and we've said this now for the last couple of years, we think that the 10-year Treasury over the next 5 years is going to be somewhere between 350 and 450, meaning 4.5%. And if we're now below 4.5% and the Fed's going to cut, we're going to be clearly into the threes, which would spur economic activity in an area, especially within Willmar, by the way, where housing prices have held in there quite strongly. Affordability is not great, and you haven't had a lot of new supply on the market. So I do think that if, as natural resources become a little bit more prevalent, and you can go out and buy wood and do all those kind of things and cement that takes to buy build houses, I think that's just going to improve the supply and drop the price of homes.
Last thing on that, though, I read a Wall Street Journal story today suggesting lumber has jumped up a bit and that lumber sometimes can be a precursor of good and bad. Do you buy the lumber idea that it might be an early indicator of either the better part when it's dropping or the concerning part when the price jumps?
That's a great point to bring up. So if you talk about companies like Pulte and D.R. Horton and even Home Depot and Lowe's and that, you know that they bought lumber 3 years ago when lumber was a lot lower. So they've been stockpiling this. And housing companies in particular have had a hard time finding people to build the houses. And so they have all this backloaded lumber and cement that was bought at way lower prices. So their margins actually are going to be really, really good. To bring back this full circle and what you said about President Trump looking 2 years from now, 2 years from now, we're going to say, oh, by the way, the price of lumber that now is being put to work that we bought 2 years ago at that higher level. You follow me? By then, we're going to have strong supply and strong demand for housing, and people are going to once again want to build their houses and increase that level of housing supply.
Next time, hopefully we'll go to voicemail maybe four times.
You think I was like Twins management? Voicemail.
He was. Dave, you felt it, right? You were the one calling. I was just observing.
Yeah. Well, you saw the sweat coming off my brow.
Spam. It said spam alert.
Yeah.
If it was going to be like a 612 or 651, I would have picked it up here in New York City, but it said spam alert.
Dave just completed a triathlon. He's wearing the shirt and the medal, and he said calling you was more taxing than all the training and the event itself.
It's true. It's hurt more.
Yeah.
Dave, make Chad buy you a Theragun. You deserve it.
Well, Theragun's
a lot more than that.
Yeah. He's forced to work with me every day. He needs a lot more than that. All right, man. See you soon.
Thank you, brother.
Belsky with us. It's 29 past 2. Hey, again, it's the lead-in to Stretch Lap. Yeah, you could be the person this week. I doubt you pulled off what Dave did, and I mean this in all sincerity. It's amazing what he did, run a triathlon. And then the fact he's doing this while raising funds for Crohn's and colitis. I have retweeted what Dave has offered up. So if you can donate some money to Crohn's and colitis, I doubt you have to go very far in your friendship circle, let alone your family, to see someone who's facing it like Dave's wife, Lindsay, does. So that would be very nice. Dave, I've watched him stretch repeatedly during the show. If you sat around on your couch this weekend, you should stretch. Even if you're if you're into Pilates and yoga, you're in a better spot. But guess what? When you go to Stretch Lab, you find out a location and hours and somebody to sign up with at stretchlab.com, you're still going to feel even better when a trained professional helps you out. That's if you're at the best. If you're like the rest of us, where you're kind of trying, kind of not trying, why not go there for that opening 50-minute session? They will assess you, and I guarantee you can walk out of that place feeling a little taller, feeling a little better, and wondering how you can sign up for a monthly visit. StretchLab.com. It was a tough weekend for Jason because he parked his boat outside Maynard's, and he left his little satchel right there.
Whoops.
Left the Rolex in said satchel.
One of my Rolexes.
Yeah, that's a fair point. This one cost $228,000.
Mid-range
it's
Rolex.
It's a mid.
Yeah.
And then William David Frataloni decided to hop on said boat and walk away with that and other items, including more dollar bills and cash.
I couldn't tell if he was like with the group or if he was. But yeah,
I couldn't tell it. The boat, the 37-foot cabin cruiser, nicknamed Liquid Asset.
Yeah.
I think it's the name really should have been Steal From Me, because I'm leaving a lot of stuff on here.
Well, so if you were walking around with like a $4,000 bag holding your $200...
Only $2,400, no, the Louis Vuitton. Mm,
lame.
Keep all 55. You, come on.
So do you bring it with you into Maynard's where there's a good chance someone's going to steal it, or do you leave it on the boat where you feel like, yeah, what are the odds that somebody's going to...
Well, first, I'm not buying it. And
well,
then $2,000
bag is not that ridiculous.
I'm not going to put my $230,000 Rolex, though, on its own on the boat.
Now, I don't have any watch. I have a lot of watches. I don't have any watches that go into the five figures. I don't have any...
I don't own a single watch.
Yeah, I love watches.
Do you?
I do.
Yeah.
And, but like, I wear my, like, $80 watch if I'm going on a boat.
Do you leave that then on the boat?
Sure.
Just to see.
If you lose an $80 watch. If somebody wants to steal my, you know, Timex, go ahead.
Yeah. Here's another policy the show established today.
Mm.
That the parents who buy their children the motorized bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Instead of the pedaling bikes, should lose their children for at least a month.
Are there children on e-bikes?
Constantly.
Really? Where?
Constantly.
Where do you see these kids?
Every day. Dave, you
just
see them
like
all the time, don't you?
Like,
yes. Teens in the neighborhood.
On bike trails throughout the neighborhood.
Really?
Yes.
Everywhere.
Why are kids having e-bikes?
Thank you. That's why the parents should lose access for a month.
What? I don't know. I think you should make the parents spend more time with their kids. My guess is if you're buying your kid an e-bike,
you want them to go bike further away?
So taking those kids away from these parents, these are parents who need to. I assume these kids are horrible because they're spoiled. They're getting thousands.
Also, they're lazy. Actually, bike. Okay, if the kid has the bike, when are we out, by the way?
In 30 seconds.
Yeah. If the kid has the bike because he's going to work 10 miles away.
Fine.
I got it.
Fine.
Guess what? Most of them are not.
Hell no.
They're just lazy.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
You should be giving your kid, you know, one of your Rolexes instead of an e-bike.
Maybe the $20,000 one.
Maybe that's what Mr. Young Fratelloni was doing.
Yeah.
Stealing for the rich and giving to the kids.
Guess it no.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.